Today's workshop is Raising Media Savvy Kids. Speaker is Pastor Joel Tang. Pastor Joel serves as the English pastor at York Region Logos Baptist Church. His passion is to share the transforming power of Christ with the youth. He is currently leading a training series to prepare grade 11 and grade 12 students for university.
Background on myself, I've been at Logos Baptist Church for 4 years, but serving there for about since we planted the church. But I've been with Teens Conference since I was high school. So for the past 20 years, been helping out in Teens Conference. Time flies, and I feel old, but I can still dress like a kid. I'm still helping out this year, so that's why I'm dressed like this. I can still hang out with the kids, kind of. I've been telling the kids it's almost time to retire. But after university, at university I study electrical engineering. So technology and all the gadgets is very dear to me. As you can tell, I have my computer, I have a tablet up here, and I have my phone with me. And so when I was asked to share about how to raise up media savvy kids, I'm very privileged, even though I've been married for 4 years, but haven't had any kids myself. But I've been working with kids all for the last 20 years, and learning what they like, learning the tendency, and try to fit in with them, try to be a kid myself. But before I jump right into the topic, let me ask you a question. I'm going to give you a little bit of history first. Who has a Bible with them? Some have a Bible. Who brings, when you go to church, most of us probably go to church in this room, who brings the Bible to church? Most of us, right? As the English pastor, I find it very hard, very, very hard to ask my congregation to bring a Bible to church. And I tell a lot of the leaders to bring a Bible, because most of the kids will come up to me, "Pastor, why do I have to carry something extra? I have this, and the Bible is inside." And not only that, I'm carrying two versions of the Bible, the English and the Chinese. In here, they say I have all different kinds of versions of the Bible. I can look at the NIV if I want, or the English Standard Version of Message. I can cross reference all different stuff. And so, before I continue, I'm going to give you a little bit of background history into something that happened in 1455, something that changed the world. Actually, the Bible in 1455 changed the world. Well, the Bible has been changing the world ever since, has been put together, but something happened to the Bible that changed the world in 1455. Anyone that knows history knows what happens in 1455? Actually, changed the world completely. It was the invention of the printing press. And my computer's a little slow. In 1455, Johann Gutenberg invented the printing press. And one of the first thing he printed was 180 copies of the Bible, called, you can probably look up in history, called Gutenberg Bible. And how did that change the world? Because before the printing press, how was the Bible copied, or how was any publication copied? It would be like many of you sitting here right now with notes, taking notes, and I'll be reading a passage in the Bible, and all of you will be copying Bible, and you are professional scribes, and there will be special rooms for you to sit down in a circle. It's very interesting. In a circle, someone will read it, and all the professional scribes will write it, and they'll by hand copy out the Bible, and also any other publications out there. But 1455, with the invention of the printing press, they were able to mass produce literature. They were able to mass produce. First thing they mass produced was the Bible, because Johann Gutenberg, he's a German, he wanted to make sure he can send Bibles to everywhere and make the Bible available to everywhere, not just to the cathedrals or to one Bible per city. And so he invented the printing press, and it completely changed the world. And now every one of us who brings a Bible, I don't think anyone brings a handwritten Bible to church, right? Every one of us have one of these. But what else changed? Actually, otherwise my forehead will be very shiny. What else changed with the printing press? Well, after a while, after things are being printed, after things are being mass produced, this before the printing press, history was passed on not by written words. History was passed on by oral stories. And so you sit in a family, and then your grandparents would pass on the story, and of not just their own family story, of their own traditions, of history. They would pass on history orally from one generation to the next. And at that point, when you pass on oral traditions, a lot of things have to be done by memory. And before 1455, a lot of people, if you talk about the Bible, especially with the monks of a lot of people who serve at the church, they memorize the Bible. And if you're in church, if you study ancient Jewish history, even the Jews, they continue to memorize the Old Testament. And things were written in poems so that it's easy to memorize, it's easy to recite it. And so after the printing press, after a while, right now I know a lot of parents are complaining to me, especially at churches, that they say, well, the kids are not memorizing the Bible anymore. But because it's so rarely available for them, they just have to take out the phone and they don't memorize. It's, what's lost after the printing press was memory. We don't need to memorize as many things anymore. So the whole world changed. It completely revolutionized the world. It brought in the the Enlightenment and also the Industrial Revolution, and the printing press changed the world. And parents, this is what we're facing right now, also with the internet. Because with the internet, now when I go to school, but back then when I go to school, I have to study a lot of things. And when I study engineering, I have to memorize formulas, I have to memorize how to put together a filter or a lot of things. But now, I have everything in my hand. And I don't need to memorize all those formulas because with a calculator engineering calculator, everything is done for me. And so even more memories is lost. But now it's not the end of the world because we survived the printing press. And now we just have to learn to survive that technology that gives us access to unlimited information. And we are learning to how to deal with this newfound information, newfound knowledge. And so you'll find that there's not a lot of talks about how to deal with different technology, because a lot of professional researchers says that if they want to focus on how does, let's say, back then, a couple of years ago, how does MySpace affect the next generation? They did a whole bunch of study. But by the time they finish the study, MySpace is not around anymore. It's right now, you know, it's Facebook and everything. So things are changing. So I'm going to show you a little clip. And the printing press changed the world, but how fast the world that we're living in is changing today. So I'm going to show you a little clip. Who found that shocking? And you know what's more shocking? This was done in 2009. This was done in 2009. And that's when I first saw this. And there's actually two more other. This organization, Explain, they do a study every single year and they present it. And last year in August, the latest one, they did it for the Iowa school board in Iowa. And it's a U.S. organization. And so if you're interested to find links to these videos, I'll give them to Marie, and then you can go on the website and you can find the other links to it. But you can see there's a lot of outdated numbers on there already. There's 7 billion people on this planet, 5 billion have mobile phones, so 5 billion people have cell phones. That's more than the number of people that have access to clean toilets in the world. And also, you saw the number for MySpace, but the kids don't talk about MySpace anymore. It's about Facebook. 2 billion people on the internet, 750 million on Facebook, so 1 out of 9 people in the world. There's 200 million on Twitter, sending 100 million tweets per day. And if Facebook and Twitter were countries, they would rank third, so it would be China, India, and then Facebook, and then US, and forgot what's after US, but then Twitter afterwards. And that's just mind-boggling. How much access we have to internet. And as parents, they come up to me, they ask, Pastor Joe, how do we keep up with the kids? Let me give you one advice. You cannot keep up. I can't even keep up with the kids. I try because I work with kids, and I can't keep up with them. I have a colleague. I met him over the last couple of years, and he speaks throughout the school board in Toronto. He's a professional speaker speaking on this topic. His name is Brad Allman. If you have a chance, if you see him coming to churches, I highly encourage you to attend one of his talks, especially his media culture and faith talk. And he, I'm just talking to him, he constantly nonstop watches movies so that he can keep up with kids. And so I don't have that much time, and so I already gave up on keeping up with kids. If you think the kids are only on Facebook and Twitter, there's many, many more that's coming up. There's Pinterest, there's Path, stuff that you haven't even heard of, stuff I only heard of over the last month. And that's what, when you work with kids, when you ask them questions, that's what they'll tell you. They're open to share with you what they're watching, what they're looking at. And so for all of us, myself included, we are all immigrants of this digital world. We're all immigrants. We were born without all these technology around us. But for our kids, for the next generation, they're not immigrants. They're natives of the digital world. And there's no way we can catch up with them. I remember over Christmas, I had my cousins, and we had a little gathering. And my two cousins have kids, four of them. They all range from two to four. And I see each one of them have the little iPad. And they can do things with the iPad that I can't even do. And they can play games that I find it hard on their iPad. And they'll be flying on it. I've seen a video on YouTube of a two-year-old kid playing with an iPad, reading books on an iPad. And then when the kid wasn't looking, the parents switched the iPad with a magazine. And the kid looked at the magazine, open book, and this is what she was trying to do with the magazine. She tried to do this to the magazine. And then when it doesn't work, when the picture doesn't change, she looked at her parents and said, this thing is broken. It's not working. They are born, next generation, they are born knowing how to use these technology. We don't know how they learn this, but it's natural to them. And so for us to catch up, that's the number one tip of the night. We cannot catch up. We need them to teach us what's the latest thing, what they're into, and what they enjoy on the internet or on the devices they have. And so the internet changed over the last 20 years. This is one of the best quotes I heard. The internet changed from something that we do to something that we live. So the internet changed from one does to one live. We are living connected. And we, as I said, we are immigrants to this connected community. But our kids, they are born in this connected world. I remember going on a church retreat, try to take away the cell phone from the kids. They go screaming and crying. They can't live without the cell phone. And so I started asking the kids. I started asking the kids, can we just spend time together? Spend time over lunch without pulling out the cell phone. Spend time over dinner without pulling out the iPod and putting on headphones. And that's the one thing when I go out to eat with my wife, that's the one thing that bugs us the most. We look around, and this is the picture you see. You see computer slow. Even I'm slower, and my computer is slow. And this is the picture we see. People sitting together, and they're not talking to each other. They're talking to someone else. And when you talk to kids, they say, oh, it's okay, because they expect their friends to talk to someone else too. And we live in such a connected world. How did the kids learn this way? And I found a very shocking statistics. Where did the kids learn this? They learned it from a lot of time from parents. This statistic shows that 42% of parents admit to texting during dinner. But while because of that, 69% of kids, of teens, admit to texting over dinner. And so maybe for parents, it's not texting. But as a kid, I remember as a kid growing up, when my dad got a cell phone, because he's in business and he had to answer the phone all the time. Over dinner, he'll when the phone rings, he'll answer the phone. And so when kids growing up, if we see that, when a text comes in during dinner, what will we do? We pick up the phone and do the same thing. So we have to be very mindful if we want to teach the next generation, this, if, especially during family time. If we want to remove them from the digital world and spend time face-to-face with family, we need to, even as parents, we need to be very intentional, very mindful in doing it. Because sometimes it becomes a habit. And just like when we're driving, we hear the police say all the time, do not drive and talk on the phone. But where the kids learn from, they see parents doing it, and they do the same thing. So we have to be very careful. And so that's one thing. Well, my wife always tells at me, she always yells at me. She tells me that even we have no kids right now, but I have to stop my habits. So we'll be very mindful of each other, telling each other to be very mindful not to bring these bad habits. And I'm going to get back to this later. But when I ask my kids in a church, when I ask the kids in teens conference, when they go on the internet, what do they look for? When they're always connected on the phone, what do they look for? They give me three things. Who can guess what do they look for on the internet? What kind of things they? What would YouTube? Yeah, YouTube entertainment. They look for entertainment. YouTube is a limited. That video did not show how much content is on YouTube, but every single hour there's about 350 hours of content uploaded to YouTube. So there's no way in the world that you can watch all the content on YouTube, because there's 250 times more content uploaded onto YouTube than there is time. And so yes, entertainment. What else do they look for in the internet? Connection, relationship. Okay, they look for a relationship. And one more.
Games.
I will lump that into entertainment, right? And then one more. There's still one more they say. They look for...
Somebody to hear them.
Did someone hear them? Identity. They want to establish identity. So these are the three main things they look for. Entertainment, identity, and relationship. And let's unpack each one of them. Entertainment. We talked about entertainment a little bit already. YouTube, online games. And this is a study that says that kids, they receive about 50 hours of media coverage every single week. So for us who are working, we work 40 hours a week. Kids are teenagers, they for them, receiving media is like a full-time job. 50 hours, and it's so easily available for them. But where did they learn to watch so much media? Again, from the parents too. I remember growing up as a kid, when I go visit my grandfather, that he always had this habit. We go out and go yamcha. We go out for dim sum in the morning, and I find it as odd as a kid now thinking about it. When we sit down for dim sum, we will sit down. It's not like we have a very meaningful conversation, because we sit down. What does grandpa do? Open the newspaper and he reads the newspaper. And so he reads the newspaper throughout breakfast. And the only time we get to talk was on the way walking on the way home. And as soon as he gets home, he has this habit. He's gonna go home and read the newspaper some more. But he has this habit of turning on the radio, even though we don't listen to it much, because he's reading his newspaper, he turns on the radio. And then I notice my dad does the same thing now. And sometimes I wonder, where does my dad get from? Oh yeah, my dad got from grandpa. And even though there's no one in the kitchen, the radio is still on. There's always has to be some sort of noise. And so that's just being observant about my own environment. And I catch myself doing the same thing. I get home, I turn on the TV. And I do the same thing without knowing it. And so once again, we have to be very mindful of our actions and where the kids learn all these things. So now when they have the phone, when they sit still for a little bit over the dinner table, when you go out for dinner, what do? They start pouring out, they start playing games on it. Right? And it's the same thing that's being passed on from generation to generation. And I tell my parents at the church, just be very mindful about it. And be open to talk to your kids about it. It's not like they don't want to talk to you about it. Be mindful. They want relationship. They want connection. And I'll touch on that a little bit more. And so, well, kids, they need to be stimulated in a way that they have never been stimulated before. And that's why it's so hard for teachers. My sister's a teacher. She teaches middle school. And she knows. She always needs to keep the kids entertained. And I myself, as a pastor, I also have to learn. Half an hour sermon. But I try to keep it to 25 minutes now. We know that anything past 25 minutes, they have their phone out texting each other. And even for the older ones, they have to phone out and Twitter everything that I says. And so we have to find ways to stimulate. We have to entertain them. But then we learn, as a bunch of pastors were sitting together, it's not about entertaining kids. So that's why you see my slides. I love the pastor adapting the same way too. There's no fancy graphics. It's just white black text on white background. We try to teach the kids how to, you don't need to be entertained all the time. Sometimes you need to slow down. And I always tell the kids, you have to find time to quiet down. We can learn from Jesus. You think our life is busy? His life is busy. There's in Mark, book of Mark, in the second chapter, we learned that Jesus is talking in the house, and the whole town came to the door of the house to listen. And then he had to sneak out to spend time with the Father, by himself. And so we have to tell the kids, you have to slow down. But then and also teach the kids, teach teenagers to really let them know that multitasking does not get you more done. And my wife catches me all the time. Sometimes the TV is on. I already said that. The TV is on. I have my laptop with me working. And then my wife will catch me also pulling the phone out, doing something with my left hand on the phone, working on my laptop, working on a sermon or something like that with the TV on. And then my wife would say, how can you have so many stuff on? Are you receiving all that information? Are you able to process everything? And there's beginning to have studies to show that multitasking, there's a study that came up from Stanford, show that no matter who you are, you do not get more done if you multitask. It's better if you just do one thing at a time. One thing at a time. But then it doesn't mean, I know sometimes we got teenagers here. I see moms nodding, but after doing an hour or so of a task, you still need to take a break. Right? You can't do the same thing over and over again. So there's a balance. You need to take a break, and then you can take a 5-minute break after an hour, and then go at it again, because your brain needs to rest a little bit. But for parents, I know there's a lot of stories. The internet is a very scary place. There's a lot of bad things, mostly bad things in the internet. And there might be predators out in the internet. Yes, it's very true. And you hear a lot of stories on that. But let me remind all of us that not everything is bad. But also it doesn't mean that everything else is good. There's always a lot of stuff in the gray area. And so as parents, as also being from the church, I remember growing up in the church, learning church history. The church would say, there's a lot of things bad stuff out there. I remember movies were bad in early in the century. You do not go to talking to some of my Presbyterian friends, Pentecostal friends. They cannot go to the movie theater, because movie theater is a very evil place. If you're caught in the movie theater, they say that when the rapture comes, you will not be taken up. That's their teaching. And so movie is bad, that's what we're taught, but not every movie is bad. I don't think movies like Cars or movies like Lion King is that bad. Right? So you have to understand, not everything is bad. Another thing we've been taught, like television is bad, but there's a lot of things you can learn on television too. We heard that rock and roll is the music of Satan, right? But then rock and roll, now there's more other music that's scarier than rock and roll. So just remember, not everything is bad. But not everything is good too. You have to open up the dialogue. I'm going to touch on this a little bit more when we wrap up. But you can open up with a dialogue with your teenager, with your kid, about what they're up to. what they're up to. And the internet is sometimes, when I talk to a lot of parents, sometimes they're concerned with their kids or with their kids spending too much time on the internet. And I face those cases almost every single week. A parent will come to me and go, help me with my son. He spends all day online playing games or online on Facebook or other things. And so what do we do? And so one thing I did, I remember my intern and I, we noticed that there was a group of grade 7 and 8 that their parents keep coming up to us. They're saying they're spending a lot of time online playing games. And it's not just boys, girls too. Girls play a lot of games online too. And so what did we do? My intern and I, we went and learned how to play the game also, and we met them online. And we said, hey, let's play together. And but then we try to set an example when we only will show up for an hour at a time at most. And then my intern and I, we agree that we'll lock off after an hour just to show up because they can see our online presence. We'll lock off at a time. But after a while, we got to develop a relationship with them online while playing the game. Because remember, they think they're very good at multitasking, so they can play the game and talk to us at the same time online. And then afterwards, when we go back to church, when we see them, I've noticed a change. They see me, they see the church intern, they start saying hi to us. And then we're able to engage in dialogue. And then we say to them, oh, what else do you like? And we find out that they also like wrestling. They like other things, they like other sports. So and at church, we have a group who does, there's a fellowship that get together as a sport, as an exercise. They do a lot of wrestling together, and we invited those grade 7 and 8 to join the university brothers to engage in some exercise too, in wrestling. And they've been attending ever since for the last 3 years. And now they're completely different at church. They say hi to us, they're able to talk to other people. I'm not saying to the parents you should go and play games with your kids, but understand what they like about playing games. And that's why I also introduce them to other older brothers and sisters. If you're in the church, this encourage them to have mentorship. Get older brothers and sisters involved because it's easier for them to get to their level and talk to them and help them out. And so that's one very, very, very important thing. And our response is, this is very important for us teaching kids and watching what our kids does. Is that your view, that for the kids, the worldview shapes the values. And then the values shapes the actions. But as parents, as pastor, we're always tempted to chase after the action. Always try to address the action. I remember my friend, Brett Ullman, he mentioned that one time he had a conference out in Newfoundland, I believe, or out in New Brunswick. And at the end of the conference, a parent ran up to him, dig into his pocket and pull a package and put it in his hand. He said, I got it, and put the package in his hand. Brett Ullman looked at it. It was a pound of marijuana. And he was scared. It was like, this looked like, if someone was looking, it looked like a drug deal just happened. And after a while, Brett remembered that, oh yeah, he's been talking to this parent on the internet for a while, just counseling this parent. And this parent said, yes, I finally found the courage. I raided my kid's room and found this pound of marijuana, so here it is, I found it. And so he said that, parents, we always chase after the actions. We always go after the actions of the kids, but we have to dig deeper than that, because they have to understand their values. And on top of that, how the worldview, when they watch a movie, try to notice when you watch a movie with your teenager or with your kids, try to see what that movie, what worldview is teaching them, that movie is teaching your kids. And then how is that shaping the values they see things? And that will translate into the action. Yes, it's a lot more work, but that's what we always have to, we're always telling the parents at our church, you need to get more involved. Because I only see the kids for 3 hours every 6 days, every 7 days. But then, when they go home, who do they learn things from? Who do they interact? As parents. And so another story, I remember one time I was leading Bible study, and my wife was there helping out, and she noticed in the back, because this is such a big group of kids, I noticed in the back there were a couple of kids with their cell phone texting me away. And we didn't want to point them out because a lot of we didn't want to embarrass the kids. But we know that it happens all the time too. And so afterwards, when the parents came to pick up the kids, we just asked a simple question. We asked Uncle, do you let your kids text during the dinner table? And he'd go, No, we don't let them do that. And then we just let that, and he drove the kids home. And then when he was driving the kids home, he realized why we asked the question. And so he turned and asked his son, said, were you texting during Bible study? And his son said, was very apologetic, said, yes, I was. And then on a Sunday, it was on fellowship on Friday, on a Sunday, we were sitting there, I was getting ready for the Sunday, and the son came up to me and apologized to me. And so we need to enable parents to give them leverage, give them room to able to teach the kids. And the parents have to be involved. And so that's for entertainment. When your kids are so enjoys the entertainment of the internet so much, try to talk to them. Try to find out what worldview the entertainment they're receiving is teaching the kids, so that you will know what kind of value is shaping them, and then it will translate into actions. So while we're talking about actions, the next thing we talked about that kids going to on the internet for is to find their own identity, especially for grade 7 and 8. Who has grade 7 and 8 kids in this room? Yeah? And you find out they're changing, grade 7 and 8, and they're changing rapidly. They try to figure out who they are, and even throughout high school, they try to figure out who they are. And if you take a look at the Facebook profiles, it might change after a week. And so at school, they're looking for A's, right? At school, they try to do well because, well, as parents, we want them to do well. They're looking for A at school. But on the internet, they're also looking for A. They want to look for acceptance. And so you find them try to change their personality and see if they can find acceptance. So social networking sites are digital representation of what we think as adolescents. That's what the kids are thinking. They on a social networking site on Facebook, on Twitter, they get to portray a person, a sort of identity that they want to shape, and they want to test out the water to see if they find acceptance. So that's why if you go to a lot of social networks, you find a lot of subcultures on the internet. You find some, especially not in the Chinese circle as much, but you'll find other circle, you find they're trying to go through different subcultures, like the Gothic subculture. They dye their hair black and paint their fingernails black. And then also another group will try the punk rock subculture or the surfer subculture. They try to find different ways, different things that they find acceptance. And the one encouragement I can give all the parents that, especially for grade 7 and 8, it's just temporary. They'll grow out of it. And it's, yes, we have to teach them their own identity, and that's why at church, and that's why I encourage in family, I always remind them that they are children of God. No matter what, yes, they're Christians, or they are Chinese, they're Canadian. That's why a lot of the kids growing up in this culture are confused because they can't figure out what is what. Chinese, Canadian, they try to run away from both of them and try something else. But at the end of the day, they're children of God. They're Christian, they're loved by God. And in the digital world, they try to imagine a world that they will fit in. But we remind them that, and help them realize that God has imagined a world much better than they have imagined, because God is the creator of the world. And God will call them as his own child, and then use them in a way that God will find in a way that God has designed for them to do. So identity, our response is just remember, they will grow up out of it. I mean, the same grade 7 and 8 kid, I remember the ones that we met online, the ones that we played video games with. There was one of them, when I got to know him very well, got to know him on Facebook, I go to his Facebook, And you find a lot of videos that he posted up, and video of him burning things. He just wants to get attention. He would find something in the yard and he would burn it, and he would set up fireworks somewhere, and that's what gets attention. And he found acceptance in that, and he was doing that for a couple months, and after a while he grew out of it. He stopped burning things, and to one point because we built such a good relationship. He came up to me during one gathering, and he already said to me, "Joel, that's something I have to tell you. I'm not sure I've told you before yet, but on my birthday I got arrested by the police." I go, "Oh, okay, tell me about it." And he was a little bit ashamed. He was ashamed about it, but he was open enough to tell me about it. And he said he and his friends were doing something, and they were at the end of trespassing, but then he was open enough to tell me about. I asked him, "So what did your parents think?" And he said, "Well, my parents were upset." And then, but then he told me that the things that worried him the most was that he disappointed his dad. And I said, "You know what, just by you telling me that, I appreciate you sharing that with me. And I know you're growing up, knowing that you have disappointed your dad from your actions." And they will grow up. They'll grow up. I tell our parents, a lot of times, especially for seminary, it's just temporary, just testing out the waters to see what they find fit. Lastly, they go on the internet to look for relationship. Let me put this up first. Relationship. Let me give a primer before relationship. For myself, when I met my wife, she's from Vancouver, and we dated for a year, and it was an online relationship. We only saw each other twice a year when we dated, and that's why only after a year I said to her, "You know what, I can't wait anymore." That's why I proposed after a year, and we saw each other two more times, and we got married. So I saw her four times. And so I know a little thing about online relationship. I didn't meet her online. We met in person somewhere. If you want that story, I will save it next time. It's pretty interesting story. It involves Las Vegas. But I'll leave it at that. But we met each other. We saw each other about while we were dating about four or five times, and then we got married. We spent most of the time knowing each other online. And a lot of things. There's a study by Pew Institute to get an idea of how much online presence, how much friends we have. They say that. Let's see. Actually, no. I'm going to skip the Pew Institute first. There's another study saying that when we're online, when we have on Facebook, on average we have about 120 friends. And for kids it's a lot more, but for other people it's a lot less. So on average, we have 120 friends on Facebook. But a study shows that we mainly talked about five or six of them. And the same thing for emails. We have many, many friends on our contact list. But other than work or something, that we mainly talk to about four or five of them. If you pull out your cell phone, you can go down your contact list. You might have hundreds of people on your contact list. But you go through your call logs, you'll find out you mostly talk to about three or four people. For myself, I can name those three or four people. I talk to my wife on my cell phone. I talk to my mom. I talk to my senior pastor because of work. And I talked to one of the deacons and another pastor. The latter two because they were my best men at the wedding. And so I only really talked to five people. And on Skype, even if you have people on Skype, you mainly talk to two people. So a lot of parents, they come to me and they say that, well, they feel so lost in the digital world because, as we say, they think that kids want to be connected. They want to have lots and lots of friends. But at the end of the day, they have really deep, meaningful relationship with four or five people. Even though I have, myself, as a pastor, it's easy to collect a lot of friends. I have over 1,000 friends on my Facebook, because especially when I go on a short-term mission trip to Panama, and all the kids in Panama, they want to have a Canadian pastor friend, so they start adding it. And I, after a while, I lose track. I have about 200 of them, and I vaguely remember most of them. But they just want to be connected. But really, they only have a couple of meaningful relationships. And we all have the same thing. And so when we think of the internet, we think of the way that we connect with all these other people. And yes, it's a lot of very shallow relationship, but you can also build very deep relationship on the internet with a few people. For myself, I able to build a very deep relationship with Mel, my wife, and we got to know each other enough that eventually got married. And so that's one thing about relationship and technology. Technology over the last 50 years has separated us. You have to realize that. Technology is actually separating us. Before, we used to watch movies in the movie theater, and then we start watching in the living room, only our own family. And now everyone has their own little iPod and watch movie together. But then in the virtual world, I just noticed more and a typo on my slide. In the virtual world, it's become, it's right, the preview is wrong. In the virtual world, we are more social, more connected with other people around us, more connected, but also more dependent on the people around us. And so remember we talked about over the dinner table, using the phone. And we can draw an analogy to that, of us using a phone over the dinner table. Most of us, we go to work, we go to an institution of work, right? This one, bringing Pew Institute is a very good institute from the States who gather a lot of data on internet usage, on social relationship data. They say that it's a very conservative number, but they said 50% of the emails you send at work are not work email. 50% of the emails you send at work are personal emails, right? And they also say that about 75% of people at work admit to having private conversation on the phone and on a mobile phone at work, and also 100% are texting the family and using the phones. And so in an institution of work, we are finding ways to connect with people outside of work. And you notice a lot of workplace, they try to block Facebook, they try to block your private emails, but we find ways to connect with families. And it's very natural for us to do that. You'll probably know a story of friends or even yourself getting to work, and you'll pick up the phone and call your family and try to make sure they're okay. I talked to parents, and one of them, she works late at night, and she admits at 11 o'clock at night, she'll call home to make sure her kids are ready for bed. And it's very, very natural. There's nothing wrong with that. I myself, when I get into the office at the church setting, after I settle down, I call my wife at work, making sure she's okay. And we all do that at times, right? So within the institution, we reach out to other people. And it's very natural for us to do that. It's just with technology, we reach out to other people in another way. Let's bring it back to the kitchen table or the dinner table. The dinner table, family as an institution, is very natural for the kids to try to reach out to their friends. So remember you're on your contact list on your phone. You only really talk to four or five people deeply. I really wish you guys, all the parents, will have the relationship with the kids that you're one of the four or five. Because if not, I'm praying for your family. And you make that effort to be on that four or five contact so that your kids will talk to you regularly, especially over the dinner table. Remember my cousin's kids, 2 to 4 years old, they know how to play the iPod? The kids are being brought up with technology all around them. And I see it when I go out for dinner, and it hurts me when the parents bring kids to dinner and they don't want the kids to disturb them. What do? Give them a DVD player, give them a iPad. And the kids already learn how to self-entertain with this device. And so when they grow up, when they're bored, what will they turn to? the same devices. And so for parents, spend time with your kids. I tell this to the parents in my church all the time. Once again, I only get to spend 3 hours with the kids at church every week. Parents get to spend the rest of the week with them. Be very intentional. Don't, for starting at a young age, don't just give them an iPad or an iPod. Spend time interacting with them. Build that relationship at a young age. Open up. So to conclude, how do we respond to raising up kids in a digital media savvy world? Is number one is what Jesus said when he said to Peter, let's go out into deeper water. I know Jesus is saying in the fishing context, but I think it's also true for us when we build our relationship. Let's go out into deeper water. Let's build deeper relationship. How do we do that? Let's talk openly. And kids, when I talk to them, they want to talk to their parents. They want to. They want to have more meaningful talks, more meaningful relationship with the parents. Even those who it seems like they just want to spend time on the internet, spend time playing games. Longingly, they want a better relationship with the dad. They want a better relationship with the mom. And the parents have to set an example. Have to spend time. I know. As parents, I can't say certain things because I'm not a parent yet. But sometimes when the kids it's not necessarily they want to go to all the different classes, go to piano. I know it's good for them, but instead of enrolling them on all the classes on Saturday, spend some time with them. Spend time when they play games. Ask them. Talk openly. Hey, what interesting. That's the one talk I start with the kids at church now. When at church I see them, they're playing games. Instead of saying to them, let's put it away. I ask them, hey, what's interesting? What do you find exciting about this? And they'll openly share with you. If they're passionate about the game they're playing, they're passionate about what they're doing, they'll openly share with you. And then find out, instead of telling them no, I also brought up family. We're very easy to tell kids no. It's very, very easy to do that, especially also in the church setting, to tell them, oh, you cannot do this. Instead of telling them no, get them to tell you why. When your kids, they say that they want to buy the latest the latest CD, even though, as I said before, we cannot catch up to everything that they are listening to. There's no way we can catch up with the culture. But instead of them telling them no, you cannot get this, ask them why they want this. Ask them, get them to give you a reason why they're so interested about this. It's not saying that we cannot disengage our kids now, because our world is changing. Remember at the beginning, our world is changing so fast that they are connected with the internet, with digital media, and it's very readily available for them. But we also have to teach them to be very careful about it. And so the best way to do it is understand what interests them the most about it. Ask them why. Ask them more questions about why this is so much fun. And I love, it's a culture that you see even in my church. I tell the older brother and sister when they see kids doing other things, the first question is, why do you like doing this? Why do you like running around before church starts? Why this? We have one kid who our church service starts at 10:15 every Sunday, and every Sunday on clockwork 10:20 he needs to go to the bathroom. At first we tempted to say no, you cannot do this. No, you cannot go to the bathroom. We know you don't have to go to the bathroom. But instead of saying just no, we start to ask why. And then we find out a lot of interesting answers. And then after you ask them and why enough, if they don't give you a good enough reason, they know they cannot give you a good enough reason, they stop trying. They stop asking you, but they stop doing what you don't want them to do in the first place. Talk openly.
Why was it that he needed to go?
That kid, well, he gave a lot of reason. He said, it's because he tried giving, I remember one time he tried giving reason. He said, Well, because he didn't go ahead of time. And you know, as a kid, you know already every single excuse that they can give. And I would say to them, well, you could have gone at 10:10. So next week when I show up at church, at 10:10, I said, you know what? It's time for you to go to the bathroom. And then next week at 10:20, he gets up, he gives me an excuse. I ask him, so you need to go to the bathroom? He said, no, I need to go get something. I need to get my offering. And I go, you know what? God won't miss your offering this week. It's okay. I think, and I didn't tell him this, but I told my wife afterwards, I think the church can survive without his quarter that week. And so after a while, he stopped now. And before, for the longest time, we just keep telling him no, he would still do it. But then asking why, he just ran out of excuse. But sometimes they will give you a good reason. And you might learn something. You might learn something. You ask the kid why they want to buy the latest DVD or the latest movie. You might learn something about it. And learn to catch up to this digital media, this day and age a little bit more. And so that's the one thing I always encourage parents to engage in dialogue with the kids. It's easy to just give them, starting at a young age, give them an iPad to play with, give them a DS to play with. But engage in dialogue. You yourself will learn a lot more. And you will help discern what they're interested in. Because, as I said, there's a lot of things. I didn't want to spend time covering how dangerous the internet is. I think we all know how much danger is out there. And I cannot cover everything. But if we're able to engage in dialogue, we help them to see what's the worldview of this particular media or this particular CD or DVD or movie is saying. If you're able to help them discern that, they'll make better decisions after a while.